Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For many years, Oklahoma's wait list for service waivers for Oklahomans with intellectual and developmental disabilities has been a stain on the state's ability to care for some of our most vulnerable citizens. Currently, there are well over 5,000 citizens who are on that wait list for community-based services and adult and children seeking in-home services. Of that number, over 65% have been on that wait list for 7 years. Around 700 have been on the list awaiting state support for 13 years or more. This puts an incredible burden on family members who have to care for them, and sadly, who often have to ration medicines or in-home services to care for their loved ones. Despite the state appropriating an additional $9 million over the past 8 years, there's been no change in the size of the waiting list. So says a report released last month by the Oklahoma Legislative Office of Fiscal Transparency. While the substance of the report was on reducing the wait list, with policy recommendations ranging from an additional $49 million in extra funds to a $3 million strategic investment in children, my guests today say the waiting list is not the problem, but a symptom of a larger problem, the lack of a comprehensive support system for all those with disabilities who need it. My guests today are two activists in the field and also parents of children with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Wanda Felty is a community leadership and advocacy coordinator for the Center for Learning and Leadership at the University of Oklahoma devoted to those with developmental disabilities, and Roseanne Duplon, a policy and planning specialist for the Oklahoma Disability Law Center. They're my guests today on Studio Tulsa. Wanda and Roseanne, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So last month, the Oklahoma Legislature Office of Fiscal Transparency issued a report looking at the long-term waiting list and why DHS and the state is not doing a better job in offering services for people with developmental disabilities. So what is the waiting list when it comes to people with disabilities and needing services?
This is Wanda, and I'll start by explaining what developmental disability services are in Oklahoma, and then that will lead into the waiting list. In Oklahoma, and in most states, states are required to offer institutional level of care for Medicaid recipients if they need the institutional care. And institutional care is really a hospital, it's a nursing home, and it's also an intermediate care facility for people with intellectual disability, or ICFIID. That is an entitlement when Medicaid is offered in the state. And back in the 1980s, Medicaid came up with a waiver, a process to say, if you can support the person in their home or community at a lower cost than it would be for that institution or hospital, then you can waive that right or that entitlement to that placement and support them in the community. It just has to be at a lower cost. That is what the waiver is. So in Oklahoma, that is the Developmental Disability Services waiver. The waiting list is people waiting to access that home and community-based service in place of an institution.
And so that waiting list, are they people who have dependents at home and are simply waiting for, you know, the services to come to their home or to help them out with expenses? Or is it more, no, they have to stay in a residential situation until they're actually getting services?
So the majority of the people on the waiting list live in their home with their family or parents, and they're waiting to receive direct support for rehabilitative or habilitative support services. So they're in the community, and it's across the lifespan. There are people on the waiting list that might have been born last month who were diagnosed at birth with a disability or a diagnosis that is expected to have a disability. But there are people on the waiting list, the last number we had, where they were in the 70s, meaning they just learned about the service or they just became where they needed the service.
Roseanne, you know, that waiting list, I think over 60% is what, over 6 or 7 years? Is that right, Roseanne?
Yes, and the average length of time right now is about 12 years wait. Our waiting list has worked chronologically, so it's the order you applied is the order you would receive services. And the last number we were given, the last date was, help me out there, Wanda, it was 2007. Was it February?
No, it's actually July 15th, 2009.
July 15th, 2009. So that's who's at the top of the list right now.
Wow, so they've been waiting 12 years.
Right.
And is there any sort of weighted, I know in the transparency office, they issue in their report, they talked about maybe moving people ahead in line. And I guess there are people who are moved ahead in line. What are the criteria for moving folks to the head of the line, you know, when they do apply?
So there's some very narrow emergency criteria. And basically what that comes down to in layman terms is that your caregiver has passed away or they're incapacitated in some manner. They're in a nursing home or they're in a hospital. So the criteria is very narrow.
And you said the ages range from people in their 70s to newborns, practically. One of the things I noticed about our system that perhaps is different from other states is there's just one waiting list. There are a whole range of home and community-based service waivers, but we have one list as opposed to multiple lists. Is that a hindrance or an asset in how we help people with get access to services?
It's hard to compare with other states because each state writes their own waivers. So each state has different waivers that are targeted at different populations. And then also each state determines the criteria for those waivers. We have basically three waivers that we're talking about when we're talking about the waiting list. There are two capped waivers, meaning that there's a limit to the dollar amount that you can use on those waivers. One is for an in-home support waiver for adults. One is an in-home support waiver for children. Then the third waiver that sometimes is referred to as the big waiver is the community waiver that is not capped and allows for greater services. Those folks tend to be those people that are living in either in their own home, a group home, or a daily living support home that would be on that community waiver. Some states, those in-home support waivers are automatic. There is no waiting list. What people in those states are waiting for is that big uncapped waiver that would allow them to live on their own. While it's possible to receive services on those in-home support waivers, if you're living independently in, say, an apartment or something, it's very difficult to do on that capped amount. So the majority of people receiving services on those in-home support waivers, which is somewhere between 85 and 95% of people receiving services in Oklahoma, live in a family member's home.
Now, Wanda, let me ask you a question. When we talk about these waivers, these waivers for adults living in home, children living in home, or the community setting, what are the types of services that the state is paying for? I think unless you have a family member, which I know both of you do, that have disabilities, I think most people don't know what sort of services we're talking about. What does the state provide once you get off the waiting list?
Okay, so Rich, I appreciate that question, and I'm going to separate it into two statements. First of all, any Medicaid waiver that is provided or offered is not just state funding. It is a federal match. It's a Medicaid match. So I'm gonna round it to Wanda terms. About two-thirds of the cost of care is federal dollars, and one-third is state dollars. So the state only pays a third of the cost, and that's about, it changes every year depending on the income of the state. There's some calculation about it. So that's one thing. But what services are provided really is, when you think about the counter, remember that counter I said at the beginning mm-hmm. was institutional care? It is what supports will make a person as independent as possible while living in their home and community. So the best example I can give is the first is, and the primary is direct support, individual support to the person. And in developmental disability, it's called habilitation training specialist. That's HTS. And what that is if you know what rehabilitation is, I had a skill, I lost it, I need to regain it. Habilitation is there's a skill I need to gain that I've never had. So I'm going to go through some habilitation to gain independent skills. So that's that direct support. But inside a waiver, there's a lot more services and supports. You can access therapies, which could be occupational speech. Some people may have a challenge with feeding, and independent feeding skills may be at risk for choking. So there's some therapies that can enhance and improve that, reduce the risk. But some of the really cool supports that offered in the DDS waiver is job coaching, skill building for employment, job support, and even really connecting into the community for employment. And most of us know most of our adult relationships come from people we meet and cross paths in our employment. So that's why that's really important. The other thing is that it can provide is a recreational activity, getting into the community, transportation. Many people with intellectual developmental disabilities don't drive, so they rely on some kind of transportation. So it really is, if you think about what was offered back when we had state-run institutions, and you think about a 24-hour living environment, it's really what is, does this person need in their community to meet their independence in everyday life needs.
So it's a combination of teaching life skills, helping the person acquire those life skills, along with supports to help them along, you know, their journey, just making incremental everyday progress towards more independent living.
Yes, and Rich, I would just add to that, there's another huge benefit for adults that receive waiver services. Oklahoma's adult Medicaid program only pays for 6 prescriptions per month for an adult who gets regular Medicaid. If they're on a waiver, that prescription limit is waived, which can be huge for some of the folks. Like I know Wanda's daughter, for example, takes numerous medications and very expensive medications that would have been out of pocket if she was subject to that 6 prescription per month limit.
If I could add to that, the thinking of if my daughter was still on the waiting list and still having to figure out which of her 26 pills, one shot a day, one shot a month, emergency medicine and emergency shot. If I was having to juggle all that with a 6 prescription limit and looking at the access between the income she gets through SSI and the family's income, there's no way she would be able to access all the medical medicine she needs. And so Roseanne's right. That is a huge, because it waives that limit, yet another waiver for our state plan Medicaid. Mm.
My guests today are Wanda Felty. She's a Community Leadership and Advocacy Coordinator for the Center for Learning and Leadership at the University of Oklahoma. And Roseanne Duplan is the Policy and Planning Specialist at the Oklahoma Disability Law Center. The last month, the Oklahoma Legislative Office of Fiscal Transparency issued a report looking at the waiting list for services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And basically, they found, despite some modest investments from the legislature, nothing's happened on the waiting list. Is that a fair statement of what that report found? Roseanne?
Yeah. What the report shows is that despite the fact that we are investing money in the waiting list, and we are taking people off that waiting list and moving them to services, but what is happening is the overall capacity of the number of people being served has not changed. In fact, in 2015, we were serving 5,612 people on waiver services. And since that time, the legislature has put in roughly around $9 million, which historically they've told us that for each $1 million they receive, DDS can serve about 100 to 120 folks. So we would have expected to see at least around a 900-person increase in the total number of people being served. And in fact, as of July of 2021, we were only serving 5,320 folks on services. So the capacity for the total number of people we were served has gone down instead of gone up. Mm.
Now, I know you earlier said that we can't compare Oklahoma to other states, but do we know if other states around us have similar waiting lists of this size, where you're looking at, you know, 56, 57, 5,800 people on the waiting list?
So, yes, most states have a waiting list. Arkansas eliminated their waiting list a few years ago, and guess what happened? They have a waiting list again. So the elimination of the waiting list, or even using the waiting list as a scale to say, how are we doing? We're doing good, we're not doing good, is not a good measure. And so when you look at another state and say, oh, look, their waiting list is lower, but you don't look at what services are being offered, the truth may be the waiting list is low because people don't know about it. Maybe there's a challenge to even apply. So using the waiting list as a scale to say, is Oklahoma serving the people with intellectual and developmental disabilities doing a good job or not? It is just really a symptom of the problem. And truly the problem is our state historically, since we started having and offering a home and community-based waiver for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, there has been a waiting list. It has been there since it first started. The problem is our state hasn't come to a commitment and a dedication to support people in their community, with their family, in a respectful way for long-term planning. And that really is the biggest issue, in my opinion.
Roseanne, let me go back to you for a second. When I read this report from the Office of Fiscal Transparency, it really focuses on waiting lists as opposed to maybe a comprehensive approach that Wanda was talking about. In your interactions with legislators, do you see a sense of being able to get past the idea that the waiting list is the problem to a symptom of a problem?
I think that's where we're at this point. I think, as Wanda has pointed out, the waiting list really is a symptom of a bigger issue of our service system. And we have focused over the last 10 years on that waiting list piece of it. And I think we're just now beginning to have those conversations, and legislators are really starting to realize that it's not just the waiting list, that it's a systems problem. Because frankly, if someone comes to the top of the waiting list today, there's still the issue of, do we have service providers to fill those hours once those hours of service are approved? And the answer is not always. Families are still having trouble finding service providers even once they have hours approved. So until we take a look at the system as a whole, which includes provider rates, do we have enough providers? Is our current service system even designed to support long-term supports? Those are all questions that need to be answered with all parties at the table. We need to make sure that families and self-advocates, people with disabilities receiving services, have a say in how we change our service system moving forward. Because the fact is, our service system was born out of a lawsuit. The HISA Memorial Center lawsuit was brought by families whose children were being abused and neglected at the HISA Memorial Center. The state quickly developed this waiver system to answer that need. And we've not done any major work on changing that system since then.
You know, when you talk about the lack of service providers, is there a huge disparity across the state, Wanda, between, you know, say, Western Oklahoma, Southeastern Oklahoma, as well as the urban areas and some of the rural areas in northeastern or southwestern Oklahoma? Is there big disparities in the ability to find service providers?
So, Rich, I would love to say, yeah, that's the issue. It's rural versus
urban. But that's not.
But the truth is, no, it is statewide. And it doesn't matter if the provider agency is a big agency or a small agency, whether it's confined to a small rural town or something bigger like Oklahoma City or Tulsa, they're all having challenges finding staff to fill the needs of the supports that are offered through the waiver. So Roseanne's right. It is a systemic issue, and it is time for us to all come to the table and say, Oklahoma is better than this. We can serve people better long-term in the community where the most respect is offered, and it is that time, Rich.
Well, let me ask you, obviously it means spending more money to eliminate that waiting list, but it probably means, as part of that comprehensive system, you're going to have to pay your service providers a better reimbursement and payout for those services so there are enough service providers.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, over the last couple of years, as the state's budget has kind of ebbed and flowed, we've cut provider rates, we raised them back up, but maybe just to where they were before we cut them. And then we've had some slight increases since then. Right now, DHS is in the process of doing a provider rate study to try to figure out where we need to be. We've done these in the past. They've been done nationwide. The bottom line is we're not paying folks enough for the intense amount of work they're expected to do. They could go to 7-Eleven or Costco and make more money per hour than they're making right now. Mm. So we've got to look at paying them a wage that keep people in those positions.
Of course, that's the type of work that requires the greatest care, the greatest skill. You're dealing with another human being, and really their life and well-being is in their hands. That should be really rewarded work, to my view. Let's talk about the recommendations that the Office of Fiscal Transparency issued in that report. One said, we keep doing what we're doing. Two, we add a little more money. And then third was, we add a little bit more money. Can you maybe talk, at least that was my reading of it. Was there anything worthwhile in the recommendations that they offered? Wanda, how about you?
Yeah. So some of the recommendations was spot on. Some of the things that Roseanne and I and many other family advocates have been saying, continue to support the waiting list, continue to support moving people to provider to the in-home supports waiver or the DDS waiver. That was one of their recommendations. Continue that. And from being on the waiting list, when my daughter was on the waiting list, that offering funding to move the waiting list offers hope to the family. So we have to keep doing that. Some of the other recommendations that seemed more like a simpler way of doing the math, one of the recommendations was, if we served all the children or a majority of the children on the waiting list, because their capped waiver is smaller, we could get people off. So if we're focusing it on reducing the number on the waiting list, that was an easy way to do that. Pull people off, use the smallest waiver, pull them off. What we know about children's services in Oklahoma, they have an entitlement to Medicaid services if they've qualified for Medicaid. If they qualify for DDS waivers, they should also be qualifying for access to Medicaid, regardless of the family's income. So those entitlements that are there for children are not there for adults. So it kind of messes with that recommendation of serving children. What is it that children need that they can't get by the entitlement? Does every child on the waiting list know that they can qualify for Medicaid through a program called TEFRA? These are the things. So while the recommendations to serve as many children on the waiting list was really about reducing the waiting list, I think it opens up the conversation of, what is it that children are not accessing that they can't access even while they're on the waiting list?
I want to close. We're just about out of time, but Wanda, you've said the waiting list is not the problem, but a symptom of the problem. You said Oklahoma has not yet created a long-term plan to assure comprehensive community-based supports that they're available when they're needed. So I'm going to start with you, Roseanne. What would a comprehensive community-based support system look like?
That's a great question. And I think that that's what we need to decide as a state, what we want that to look like. I think Juan and I are both in favor of writing a comprehensive plan, bringing those stakeholders to the table, just DDS, the service providers, the families, the individuals with disabilities, and really mapping out what does that look like. Include our legislators. What kind of funding commitment can we look at to grow this system incrementally? We know it can't all be done at once. We don't have the provider network to support that. But what kind of steps can we take year after year to ensure that we're building a system that doesn't put the burden on families till they're 80 years old to care for their loved one, that promotes independence and allows individuals with disabilities to live as independently as possible?
And Wanda, for you, would you add any, what would you add?
There's nothing I would add to that other than using the model that our state used to create the Pinnacle Plan. The legislators went across the state, talked to and learned from the people in our state that it mattered. The thing that happened with the Pinnacle Plan, that was in response to a lawsuit. We know that we're at risk at any time of being sued due to the lack of support offered to people with disability. So let's get ahead of it. Let's use the model that was used to create the Pinnacle Plan and do that comprehensive plan, as Roseanne said.
It sounds a little bit, because of the provider issue, we're going to have to build the plane while we're flying the plane, though.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Wanda and Roseanne, we appreciate your time today. And how do people get more information, especially if they have a family member or somebody they know that has disabilities and may or may not know to apply? What's the best site to learn more about this?
So there's several sites. First of all, I'd encourage them to go to okdhs.org and go to the developmental disability page. There's information about applying for developmental disability services. We also have a Facebook page, Waiting in Oklahoma, and there's a quarterly waiting list meeting that I coordinate, and I invite the leadership of DHS and DDS to come and speak to families. And legislators are often there.
All right. Well, Wanda and Roseanne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Wanda Felty is a community leadership and advocacy coordinator for the Center for Learning and Leadership at the University of Oklahoma. And Roseanne Duplan is a policy and planning specialist at the Oklahoma Disability Law Center. These two advocates are discussing last month's report from the Oklahoma Legislative Office of Fiscal Transparency on the waiting list for people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. You can read the report at the Legislative Office of Fiscal Transparency's website, okloft.gov. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.